This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
And Dean.
On our podcast.
This is our podcast.
It is our, I've just said that, Dean.
This is our podcast.
Oh, it's still our podcast now. That's cute.
Cute.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Play the podcast, please.
Time for...
It's not J Law. Uh-huh. It's not J Lo. It's Joy Law.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's time for J Law. With the team from KHQ Lawyers, who join us every week at around this time to chat about issues of interest and of concern to the LGBTI community. Joining us live in the studio today, we have Bronwyn and Chloe. Welcome back, guys.
Hi.
Thank you.
Nice to be back.
Now, today we're going to be talking about substance abuse or use and how that might play out in a family law matter or family court.
Yes, we are. So often in family law matters, we see issues of substance abuse raised, particularly in parenting matters. Accusations about these issues are often made when one party either has genuine safety concerns about a child being in the care of a person who has a substance abuse problem.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they can also arise in situations where one parent is trying to attempt to reduce the other parent's time with the child and they make allegations of substance use or abuse. Mm. When an accusation is made, especially if we're in court, evidence is required to either support or refute the claim. In family law disputes, the frequent claims we see are so the inappropriate use of prescription drugs and also the use of illicit substances.
And so one partner is using that as leverage or saying they can't be trusted with our children.
Exactly.
Because of their substance use.
Yes.
I think it's always interesting, substance use and substance abuse. There can be a fine line, I guess.
There definitely can with legal substances, such as we see often with prescription drugs.
Yes.
People who
like
become...
Like camel flight.
What is it? With prescription drugs, people do use them and people do become dependent on them and they can self-medicate. And when that is an issue, people can have concerns about the safety of their children when they're under the care of that person.
And I guess when it's illicit substances, it's a different story again.
It is if they're illegal, they're illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody should be using them. Of course, people do use them and they do use them socially and they, you know, there is an argument people do say that they can use them responsibly or they use them when the children aren't with them, so therefore why is it a problem? The problem is the long-term side effects of these drugs and the drug use, it's not really known. I mean, it does affect their mental health, it does affect their ability to make decisions, and when you're talking about the welfare of a child, those things are important.
And certainly we've seen played out in the media stories of the ice addiction and how that can creates quite a lot of trauma within the family law.
Bath salts.
Horrible stuff.
How do you get evidence? What sort of evidence is needed or what is
If you suspect that the other party, sort of the other parent to your children, as Chloe said, this usually comes up in parenting matters, is using or abusing drugs, we suggest that the first thing you do is safeguard the safety of the children. So if that means making sure that any time that person spends with the children is supervised by someone that you trust, that's a good start.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to actually collecting that evidence, we usually need to do that by way of drug screens, drug tests. So this can happen, parties can agree that one or both parties will undergo certain drug tests, but if they don't agree, you can actually get court orders requiring someone to undergo drug tests.
To take a drug test.
Yeah, absolutely. So usually the types of tests that we see, the most two common ones are urine screens and hair follicle testing for drugs.
Oh.
So for urine screens, it'll be a matter of going to your GP, getting a referral to a pathologist and, you know, results come back fairly quickly saying a substance is either detected or not detected. For hair follicle tests, it can be a little bit more involved. So you'll go to a specialist lab. They'll take a small sample either from your head or somewhere on your body.
Oh,
If they can't get a sample from your head hair. So usually the sample needs to be at least 1 centimetre in length because what we know is there's 1 centimetre growth per month usually for hair. So it gives a good spread of time.
Mm. Also, what we've found is that obviously when people are drug users and they might obviously know about these hair follicle tests and think that they can cheat the system somehow,
yes,
you can actually get orders restraining people from cutting their hair and removing their body hair if necessary.
Oh, getting a bigger wax.
So we have seen that. And the reason that we do look at hair follicle tests is something that's really quite important. A lot of substances will excrete through the system really quickly. So they won't be detectable in a urine screen if they've been taken, say, 72 hours before one is ordered.
Right.
So that in when that happens, a hair follicle test will show a pattern of use. It will also show frequency of use. So they can be really, it can be really good evidence if you are in court.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Isn't it, are the common substances they look for? Is it like marijuana and ice, as I said earlier? And
yeah, so it's things like...
What else is there?
We can give you a list. So the most common things are benzodiazepine, cocaine, methamphetamine, opiates, that sort of thing. But, like, that's standard, but if there are other drugs that you suspect may be in play, that's something that you can request in orders or in the testing. So it can be quite broad.
But sometimes I have heard, I'm no expert on the issue of substance abuse or use, but there can be highly functioning, people can be highly functioning and be a user of
definitely
a number
yeah
of those things.
That is true, and that is something that I've come across with personally in terms of with matters I've dealt with, where there might be a party or even parties together who have used drugs together when they've had the kids, when they've been happy families, and then all of a sudden when something's broken down in that relationship, it becomes an accusatory thing, and you
yes
can say, well, that person does cocaine and that person smokes pot on the weekends and therefore I don't want them to be around my children. If you are sort of, if they are in agreement and you're not in a court system, that's a matter for them, that's a matter for DHS. If you are in a court system, you really have the children's rights will come first. And no judge is going to say that it's in a child's best interest to have parents who are affected by illegal substances.
Even if they can hold themselves together, that's not a good enough reason.
I mean, I'd like to see them explain that to a judge and say, look, I am a cocaine user on weekends, but, you know... It's fine.
It's like me not getting to a nightclub. They're just like, you have to go home. I'm fine.
What
are you talking about? Yeah, more drunker than this.
We are chatting to the team from KHQ Lawyers
untrue
about substance abuse or use in family court matters.
Joy.
We're chatting to Bronwyn and Chloe about family law matters, and particularly where there's an issue of substance abuse or a question of substance abuse or substance use. Now,
yeah,
Bronwyn, you're going to say...
Yeah, so we just wanted to point out just a few helpful hints, hopefully. If you are thinking about asking for a drug test, some things that you should possibly think about beforehand.
Well, for yourself? I like a drug test, please.
Look, you can volunteer at any time.
Asking that you're, asking that you're the person you're in dispute with be
yeah
tested.
Yeah, looking to get yep them drug tested. So a few things you should keep in mind is the time frame for that testing. So usually what we do is we request that the person undergo a drug test within 24 hours of a request, say, so just that it gives them less time to, you know, try and flush out the system or whatever they might want to do. We also require that the tests be requested randomly, so they don't come to expect when the requests are coming and then alter their behaviour to try and...
So it's like in the workplace, we do random drug testing in the workplace.
Yeah, but you want it to be genuinely random. You don't want them to know. You want any tests to be supervised by qualified professionals, because people can come up with some pretty creative ways to evade detection when they're being tested. And something else you want to think about is the cost of the testing. Who should bear that? Because it can be quite expensive. So for your urine screens, it might just be like an attendance upon a GP, that sort of thing. But for your hair follicle testing, that can be many hundreds of dollars, if not over $1,000. So that's something to think about.
That's a lot.
It is a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
More than most drugs possibly cost.
Allegedly.
Well, you've got to think, is it worth it? Is it worth it to do the drugs?
So what if your partner or the person you're in dispute with says, I want you to be tested? What are your rights? Can you say, no way, Jose?
Look, of course you can, unless there's a court order that says otherwise. If I have a client come to me and that they are being accused of taking drugs, whether it be illicit substances or prescription medication that they don't have a prescription for, I always say to them, look, go and get a urine screen for me. Go and get a couple of them. Go and get them over a few weeks. Because normally what happens is when these people are being accused of that, they're not seeing their kids in the meantime.
Mm.
So the parent might be withholding the kids from them or demanding that they have them supervised. And if there genuinely is no issue, and this might just be sort of a vindictive claim, go and get the test, refute it, and then... If they keep withholding the children, you make a court application and you've got evidence to back yourself up. Often what happens is, though, the people that are accused, they feel wronged. They feel that the whole thing is completely unfair. There's no basis for it. They want their day in court. They want to have the other person sort of held accountable for this false accusation. Mm. Look, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, suck it up.
It might eventually, but you might not see your child in the meantime. So go and if there is no genuine reason, then you need to go and refute that straight away. And look, if there is a genuine reason, you have to take steps to deal with it.
Absolutely. I think what sometimes gets lost in family law matters is it's about children.
Exactly.
It's not always about you. So you want the best for your child.
Exactly. You should want the best for your child. You have to assume that the other parent wants the best for their child.
Yeah.
And if you do go to court, the court will look at the best interests of the child first. Your interests don't come into it.
Thank you, Bronwyn and Chloe. We look forward to speaking to you guys again next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.